The Bush administration has challenged more legislative provisions in this way than any other presidential administration in American history. If Bill Clinton had done this, we would still be hearing about it. Today, few Republicans in public life have been courageous or principled enough to speak out against a clear abuse of power. Among them are Bruce Fine, Associate Deputy Attorney General under Ronald Reagan, and former Congressman Bob Barr. Again, an American president must pledge never to use the signing statement as an alternative, unconstitutional form of legislative power, and Congress and the American people should hold them to it. Much of the recent revival of interest in the Constitution centers around the Bill of Rights and the War on Terror, a subject I discuss elsewhere in this book. I could not be more sympathetic to these concerns. However, Americans must remember that the Constitution was designed not merely to prevent the federal government from violating the rights that later appeared in the Bill of Rights. It was also intended to limit the federal government's overall scope. Article 1, Section 8 lists the powers of Congress. Common law held such lists of powers to be exhaustive. According to the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, all powers not delegated to the federal government by the states, in Article 1, Section 8, and not prohibited to the states in the Constitution, in Article 1, Section 10, are reserved to the states or to the people. Thomas Jefferson held that this principle formed the very foundation of our Constitution. It was a guarantee that the experience Americans endured under the British would not be repeated, and that political decisions would be made by their own local legislatures rather than by a distant central government that would be much more difficult, if not impossible, for them to control. Jefferson's approach to the Constitution, which he adamantly believed could be understood by the average person and was not some secret teaching that had to be divined by immortals in black robes, was refreshingly simple. If a proposed federal law was not listed among the powers granted to Congress in Article 1, Section 8, then no matter how otherwise attractive it seemed, it had to be rejected on constitutional grounds. If it were especially wise or desirable, there would be no difficulty in amending the Constitution to allow for it. And according to Jefferson, we should always bear in mind, to the extent possible, the original intention of those who drafted and ratified the Constitution. On every question of construction, carry ourselves back to the time when the Constitution was adopted. Recollect the spirit manifested in the debates, and instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, conform to the probable one in which it was passed. Our peculiar security is in possession of a written Constitution, Jefferson advised us. Let us not make it a blank paper by construction. Jefferson was afraid, in other words, that we would allow our government to interpret the Constitution so broadly that we may as well be governed by a blank piece of paper. The limitations the Constitution placed on the federal government had to be taken seriously if we expected to maintain a free society. There would always be a powerful temptation to allow the federal government to do something many people wanted, but that the Constitution did not authorize. Since the amendment process is time-consuming, there would be a further temptation. Just exercise the unauthorized power without amending the Constitution. But then, what is the point of having a Constitution at all? It is true that, although Jefferson was a great constitutional exegete, he was not himself present at the Constitutional Convention. But Jefferson's ideas were not his alone. They reflected many of the sentiments expressed at his state's ratifying convention by such important and diverse figures as Edmund Randolph, George Nicholas, and Patrick Henry, not to mention John Taylor of Caroline, perhaps the most prolific political pamphleteer of the 1790s. Jefferson was merely giving voice to this much larger tradition when he expounded his strict constructionist views. Confidence is everywhere the parent of despotism, said Jefferson in 1798. Free government is founded in jealousy and not in confidence. In matters of power, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. Nearly a quarter of a century later, Jefferson could still be heard uttering the same warning. Is confidence or discretion, or is strict limit the principle of our Constitution? I sometimes hear the objection that certain phrases in the Constitution give the federal government more power than what is listed in Article 1, Section 8. The General Welfare Clause is often cited, although equally dishonest interpretations of the Interstate Commerce and Necessary and Proper Clauses have also been put forward. I have already noted that common law held lists of powers such as the one in Article 1, Section 8, to be exhaustive, a point that refutes the idea that qualifying phrases like general welfare could give an open-ended character to the powers themselves. But the testimony of the framers is also very clear. James Madison wrote, "If Congress can do whatever in their discretion can be done by money and will promote the general welfare, the government is no longer a limited one, possessing enumerated powers, but an indefinite one, subject to particular exceptions." Toward the end of his life, he added, "With respect to the words general welfare, I have always regarded them as qualified by the detail of powers connected with them. To take them with a literal and unlimited sense would be a metamorphosis of the Constitution into a character which there is a host of proofs was not contemplated by its creators." And, of course, as Madison elsewhere wrote, if the federal government really had been intended to carry out whatever action might promote the general welfare, what was the point of listing its specific powers in Article 1, Section 8, since the superpower would have covered all of those anyway?